I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We live in an amazing time for photography. So many of us carry powerful cameras with us everywhere we go in our smartphones, and they're getting better with every iteration. Small point-and-shoot cameras can also be remarkably good, and digital photography has revolutionized what we're able to do with our zillions of photos once we've taken them. This is all at our fingertips. But the fundamentals of taking a good photograph haven't changed. And with a few simple skills, you can elevate your snaps from average to Instagram-worthy, or maybe even go old school and print them out and frame them. We thought it might be a good time to spend a little time talking with some professionals about how to take better pictures. From how to photograph tricky snow scenes without either washing everything out or leaving your scene a dull gray, to getting the perfect holiday shot indoors with the whole family, we're going to get tips and tricks. We are joined now by Allison Redlich, a former photojournalist with the Burlington Free Press who now teaches photography and is still a professional photographer herself. Allison, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Joshua Farr, Executive Director and Curator for the Vermont Center for Photography, a nonprofit gallery in Brattleboro. Joshua, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Joshua, can anybody be a good photographer?
Absolutely.
Good. Short and declarative answer. Do you believe that, though? You really do believe anybody can take a good picture?
Yes. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have become so overwhelmingly concerned with getting the right camera. And although photography is a technologically based art form, what really seems to make the biggest difference, in my opinion, is really the person behind the camera and how you're seeing the world around you and just sort of your spatial awareness. And that's, I think, something that any of us can relate to.
I mean, doesn't the Vermont Center for Photography do a Pinhole Camera Day exhibition every year, too, where you help people make pinhole cameras? So you don't even really have to have any technology.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the third or fourth Sunday in April is Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. And it's kind of a beautiful little open studio workshop where folks can come in and make a camera from anything from a coffee can to a cardboard box to a man even made a camera out of a potato one year just to make things interesting. So, and it really pares down to the very extreme fundamentals of photography and what the technology actually does to create an image. So it's certainly something that we have anywhere from 5-year-olds to 85-year-olds coming in. So it's a little something that anyone can enjoy, definitely.
Allison Redlich, you've got to give us some tension here. I mean, any good radio interview with two people has to have some tension. Do you agree, or can you give us the sense that not everybody is just a natural-born good photographer? You have to have some skill.
I think both are true. Yeah. I think both are true. I think that the trick, actually, is sometimes not even taking pictures. It's just educating your eye and your brain on what is aesthetically pleasing. So I tell my students all the time, the fastest way to grow your personal vision and increase your aesthetic values is to look at anybody whose photographs or artwork you admire. Look at old school art books in the library. Find someone that you want to follow on Instagram who has a personal vision that you find interesting or maybe opposite to how you see the world, so that you are just educating your eye and your brain before you even pick up a camera.
Is that in the sort of imitation is the sincerest form of flattery school
yes,
of thought? But then
that
are you, you know, if I love Ansel Adams and I'm suddenly now trying to take Ansel Adams like photography, first mm-hmm. of all, I will never be Ansel Adams, but also then I'm not sort of cultivating my own vision. How do you cultivate your own vision if you're looking at other people to sort of get a sense?
I think for me it's two-pronged. I tell my students, what wonderful memories do you have from your childhood that you wish you had a photo of? And then extrapolate that and think about what memories you want to remember from your college days, make those images now so you have them 30 years from now. And so if you think about how to turn your ordinary surroundings into something that should be documented, that's one way to grow your personal vision. Another way is to simply carry your camera, get your phone out if your only camera is on your phone, and make sure you have it ready and present so that when something wonderful passes you by, you're ready. You know, you're good to go. In terms of growing your personal vision, I have a photographer's toolbox that I encourage my students and my friends and family to use that sometimes helps you get from point A to point B and grows what you're able to see. I think light for me was always trickier to see than the moment. I think people fall into two categories. And in terms of Ansel Adams, I used to take better landscape photos before I became a photojournalist. So sometimes you can regress. But, you know, the rule of thirds, finding some way to frame your image. Sometimes with landscape photography, there's so much you want to show, and it's so hard to capture that perfect frame. So don't limit yourself. You know, my former photo teacher at New York University, Elaine Mays, who's a genius, said, plant your feet, turn 360 degrees, and take photos from every vantage point you possibly can. Get up high, get down low, try different things, challenge yourself. Nobody became Ernest Hemingway in a day if you extrapolate great writers and writing yourself. So don't put too much pressure on yourself. Just have fun. And I always tell my students, whatever you're interested in, that's going to make the best photo. So go out and have fun with it.
We got one from Mark, who writes, I've been a photographer for several years, documenting our family travels, kids' sports, and taking portraits of friends and family. This past year, I embarked on a journey into film photography, a classic medium that I grew up with but never fully appreciated until I was an adult. It has been an incredibly meaningful and profound experience that has allowed me to experience the entire process of photography anew. And by the way, Mark gave us a link to one of his favorite photos from 2018, and you can see the photo at vpr.net. You can click on today's Vermont edition. But Mark continues, for 2019, my goal is to begin developing my own film at home and bring that skill set to my photography. Listeners, before we come back to Allison and Joshua, I also want to give you the prompt that Allison just gave us, which is such a wonderful one I haven't thought of before. What are the memories that you wish you had a photograph of from earlier in your life, whether it's your childhood, your kids' childhood, a moment in your career, a moment in your travels? And how are you then taking that desire and recreating it in the photos that you take today? I love that idea. I love that question. Again, call 800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Joshua, do you have a memory or an idea or a sort of an overarching regret, I guess, that you don't have captured from your childhood? I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, you know, I think I, growing up in Western Maine, I think my family was probably more prolific of a photo-laden family than most. Our basements are currently filled with Tupperware containers filled with prints and negatives from the 80s and 70s and beyond. But no, I mean, as far as my own personal childhood, I think I've pretty much had a camera in my hand since I was, I have a photograph of myself from probably 1990 with a Kodak Instamatic in my hands. And I think I've pretty much had some sort of camera in my hands, throughout the process, or I was taking the photograph myself ever since then. So
How old were you in 1990?
I just turned 30 a few weeks ago, so I was a ripe old 2 or 3 years old at the time. But so it kind of starts to beg this question, especially getting into the more modern generation of cell phones and digital, is that we are, in that case, sort of inundated with this question of what to do with all these photographs that we're given. And some of those are analog film photographs, and some of those are digital files sitting on someone's external hard drive.
It may be easier to find the ones that are in your parents' basement in the Tupperware containers than, you know, that are stored on your phone now or somewhere in the cloud at some point when you're no longer around. You know, it's not as easy for the next generation necessarily to just sort of flip through all of those negatives or all of those prints.
And it's certainly more romantic, I think, to lay out on your living room floor and flip through old albums than it is to hunch over your computer, flipping through folders of JPEGs and things like that. So,
Yeah, that's true. Matt Smith, one of our producers here, says, I wish I had more photos of me just playing with my friends when I was under 10 years old. I'd love to see pictures of playing in the woods. So maybe we'll see some new woods photography from Matthew Smith this winter. Allison, do you, I mean, this was your prompt. Do you have things that are motivating you to have that prompt?
I had wonderful parents who challenged me to do many things that I was terrible at. One of them was skiing. So getting pictures of me on skis for the first time would have been hysterically funny. I think I was wearing jeans and the totally inappropriate coat, so it really would have been something to see. No, I think it's really just photographing the people that are important to us, the pets that are important to us. I had the same Kodak Instamatic camera when I was growing up, except I'm so much older than you are, so mine was really old school. And I love taking pictures, but I didn't document my daily life. I documented things that I saw going on around me or special occasions, but not the ordinary. There's a wonderful photographer named David Hume Kennerly, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner and has photographed most of the sitting presidents in recent history. And he always challenges himself to take a new photo every day that he can be proud of, even now. And I wish that everybody out there would do that, whether they want to be better at photography or not, because I think it's such a valuable archive. Everybody's life, own life, deserves to be remembered and documented.
My great-great uncle when I was a kid was famous in the family with the children because he had a Polaroid camera. And so he would take them out and photograph, you know, whoever or whatever, and then put them in his shirt pocket and let them develop. And so that was one of the overarching memories for me of childhood was sitting with Unky and getting photographs and watching them just sort of magically appear in front of you. And Joshua, like you, I was an early shutterbug and I had a camera from, you know, age 4 or 5, but I'm an 80s kid. And so my camera had a flash that you would slide into the top of, it was a Fisher-Price camera, and you'd slide it into the top. And every time you took a picture with the flash would blow. And it
exploded.
Made this, yeah, it was this great
bulb,
sound
yep.
and great smell. And you only had like 5 of them. So you had to be really careful about what you were going to take a flash photograph with. So great memories of young, early photography days for me too. And I highly recommend if you have kids in your life, give them a camera and see what they come up with because it's fascinating. Kathy from Jericho says, I trained my daughter to take a photo with her eyes and her heart when she didn't have a camera. Now she's an amateur photographer herself. All right, so let's get into some of the tips for people. No matter what equipment you have, whether you have a phone in your pocket that has a camera or a little point and shoot or a big expensive DSLR, there are certain things that you can do to make sure that you're taking better photographs, you know, no matter the equipment. So, Allison, what would you recommend to people to try to think about when they're about ready to take a picture?
The first thing is just make sure if you have a digital camera, your settings are where you need them to be before you really start looking around. It calms me down to know that I'm ready and I'm prepared. And if you have an iPhone, make sure that it's on the right camera mode setting that you want. There are so many these days. There are also different programs and apps that you can buy, like Hipstamatic, that change the look of your image. So if you have an option like that, make sure you're where you want to be.
Do you recommend using the live setting or not the live setting? So a live setting on an iPhone, for example, you can take a picture, and then if you don't like exactly how it turned out, it's actually captured about a second on either side of it, and you can change so somebody's not blinking right when you took the picture.
I personally love the live setting, but not everybody does. Some people find it distracting. So do what's best for you. And I really do feel that way about everything when it comes to photography. Whatever you're comfortable with, that's the right answer for you. This is supposed to be fun. You know, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Just go out and be curious like a child. You know, think about the world. Think about what you want to see. It depends on what you want to do. I mean, for me, the easiest thing I can tell people is don't take the picture at eye level. Get up high, get down low, use your arm like a selfie stick if you want to use that imagery in your head, and you know, do we used to call them Hail Marys in photojournalism because you never knew what you were going to get with film. Just change your perspective. That is the quickest, easiest way to make an image look different. I always tell my students to think about honest emotion and interaction. Those are the two easiest things that we usually want to document. And the great thing about honest emotion is people are having an emotion and they're engaged in something else. They're not wondering why you're taking their photo. They're completely oblivious to you, which is great. Interaction is the same thing. When people are interacting with someone or something or having a moment of their own, again, they're not paying attention to you. You can do whatever you want, you know. So just
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse.
Let me turn to Joshua here for a moment. What about lighting? I mean, lighting is such a key one and such a tricky one, especially if you're indoors, if you're trying to take a posed photograph of people. How do you think about lighting no matter where you are? Mm. Or just, you know, tips that people should keep in mind.
Sure. Well, just to kind of play off a little bit of what Allison was mentioning at the beginning, I'm a pretty avid believer myself that the best camera really is the one that's in front of you. And there is no dollar amount that will buy your way into being a skilled photographer. So I've seen plenty of people make beautiful images with a $3,000 camera and beautiful, gorgeous images with a $5 plastic toy camera. So like she also said, I mean, it really just has to be whatever works for you. There is no one flatline rule for every photographer out there. But, you know, ultimately, what I believe photography is about for myself is really about light. I mean, the word photograph literally means drawing with light or some variation of that. And it's really these sort of dramatic moments of light that I think make some of the strongest photographs. And so you start to look around your environment and you see these, you know, it might be something as simple as the way that the sun is coming through the curtains in your living room when you wake up at 7 in the morning and the sun's just coming through, or certain reflections that you catch through a shop window walking down Main Street, or the way a shadow might play off of each other cast against a wall with street lamps at night or something like that. So it really does come ultimately down to light. And as far as, you know, more domestic scenes and taking family photos and holidays and things, I know many photographers who will adamantly insist that every photographer manually rip the on-camera flash off of their camera because it being such a sort of direct frontal light like that can be many times rather unflattering. So, you know, look for the room in your house that has a nice kind of evenly distributed natural light is wonderful if you can get it. And, you know, also oftentimes photographing in the shade is going to do you much better than photographing in harsh, you know, direct mid-afternoon sunlight. So I know a lot of photographers who won't go out and photograph if it's too sunny out on some days. So,
Take a long siesta, photograph in the early morning,
sure. Or,
you know, the sort of late afternoon golden light era.
early morning and early evening are certainly some of those golden hours, as they like to call them, in photography.
Susan emailed in about missing a photo and writes, I lived in Fairbanks, Alaska in the late 90s and was working the Yutan Quest sled dog race. Allie Zirkel had just finished. She's a powerhouse in the sled dog world. Her mentor and the first female to win the Iditarod, Susan Butcher, was at the finish line. As Allie drove her dog sled off to her truck, Susan hopped on the runner of the sled with her. I had a perfect silhouette of these two amazing women, and I so regret missing that in terms of taking a photograph. And, you know, Susan, I hear you on that. I have a lot of photos, too, that I didn't get the chance to take or didn't have my camera with me. And boy, are those hard to miss. But what a wonderful thing that so many of us have phones that can actually take decent pictures now. I mean, it didn't used to be that way. Now you can take pictures all the time of almost anything, assuming you have your phone with you and it takes pictures. I promised snow, and this is a time of year when a lot of people are taking pictures of beautiful snowfall. You know, you wake up in the morning and the world is magical. And how do you make that magical picture that you're seeing in real life show up in the photograph that you're taking, Allison?
Oh gosh, there are a lot of tricks we can teach you. It depends on whether you're using a digital SLR, which is a single lens reflex camera, where you have interchangeable lenses, or if you're using your phone. Here's my biggest secret, which nobody believes until they try it. The easiest way to correct for your camera's propensity to underexpose or overexpose the image that you're seeing when it comes to snow is to use a fill flash. And you're probably thinking, why would I want to add light to an already sunny situation? It sort of balances out your aperture. And it, if you have something in the foreground, I call it dominant foreground, contributing background, which really just means you're great Aunt Irma standing in the foreground and there's beautiful, you know, Mount Philo in the background. How do you match the two? A little bit of fill flash will make sure that the light is more even.
Because, and so by fill flash, you just mean a flash that will sort of add more light to the picture.
Add more light to the picture. So if you have a digital SLR, sometimes there's a pop-up flash that you can put a $25 aftermarket diffuser on, which will soften your light and keep those shadows from looking so harsh. On your iPhone, there's a flash option. You just turn the flash on and use it, even though it seems counterintuitive. And if you have a flash that you can add on a hot shoe to that digital SLR, you can also buy a diffuser for that, like Gary Fong has one that I really like. I call it Tupperware, but it actually works really well at evening out your flash and making the bigger the light source, the softer the light. So it just makes your flash source bigger. That's one. Another one is shooting in RAW mode. If you're using a digital SLR camera, that ensures that if you over or underexpose, you're able to correct it in post-op is what I call it, but really in Photoshop. Something else you can do is slightly overexpose your image for whiter snow. Try to include non-snow objects like trees, mountains, sky, colorful people or sleds.
Contrast.
Contrast is key. And you want to try that framing. So sometimes I tell my students, try to think of the branches of a tree framing the top of your image just to give it a little bit of contrast. You can check your camera's histogram to make sure that you're properly exposing.
What if you're just using an iPhone or a, you know,
iPhones
an Android?
Are great because you know exactly what you're getting in real time. And so what you can do, again, is change your angle and height. Try rule of thirds. That's where you think of your image as a grid and you photograph thinking about the top, middle, and bottom third horizontally or vertically. And you just sort of put things left or right of center a little bit. Just play around with it and see what's aesthetically pleasing. But especially with snow, because what you'll find is that snow, if you overexpose it, it all goes white. And if you underexpose it, it all looks gray and yucky. So you're looking for that sweet balance. Again, fill flash will help with that. Shooting from a shadowed area can sometimes help. I always tell my students if they don't want to be part of the photo, make sure you sweep up your footprints after yourself or aim in a different direction. If you can invest in a filter or a protective UV, we call it a sky filter or a protective UV filter, that'll keep your camera lens from getting damaged. A lot of times it can fog up or you get it wet and you just want to make sure that you have a protective coating for that too.
Joshua, do you have snow advice? And if not, let's talk a little bit about what to do after you've taken a photograph, how to fix it in post, as we might say.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as for snow, no one's claiming it's necessarily an easy thing. I think, you know, all of Allison's points are certainly pretty spot on. I think that to kind of contradict my own reasoning in some ways, I also have just kind of myself been learning to loosen up and let go of all of the technical rules and laws of photography. And you know, sometimes you can experiment and let things go overexposed. And sometimes that sort of stark contrast between whatever your main subject is, if it's a house or a person, and the sort of bleak white environment that you've just created through this overexposed photograph can make for some really sort of dramatic and poignant images. So, but as far as post-production, I mean, certainly shooting in RAW is going to give you so much more leeway in the editing process to bring the detail in those highlights back. If you're shooting in JPEG, it's just not going to be as forgiving. People come to me all the time asking about sort of technical Photoshop questions, and I kind of preface everything by saying that, like, I have terrible computer practice, and not terrible, it's just a very specific thing that I've developed for myself over the years, and it just works for me. And I'm a very simple, simple editor. And I think that in many ways that could help a lot of people by, you know, you open up Photoshop and there's a toolbar of 50,000 things on the left of, that you can do and functions and buttons and filters and you know, do some reading and watch some YouTube video tutorials are awesome. But also allow yourself to, I think, limit your tools to the essentials that you use regularly and don't overwhelm yourself, I think, with too many options.
Let's go to Josh, who's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Josh. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call and great program. I'm a working photographer, and I also teach photography at the Community College of Vermont. And I apologize if you all have already mentioned this, but one of the things that I tell my students is getting better at photography is really about time on task. And so carry your camera everywhere and shoot constantly. And over time, you'll develop your own style and you'll get better and you'll start seeing things where you're off the mark or where you're getting a better shot. And you can start incorporating that into your core kind of more planned stuff. And really, I tell them that, you know, don't say I'm going to go out and shoot photos on Saturday from 3 to 4. See it as I'm going to the grocery store. I should just carry my camera. And if I see something cool, I'm going to shoot it. Hmm. We're not wasting film. It's digital photography. You can shoot as many as you like and then delete what you really don't like and learn from all the rest.
Yeah, it's great advice, Josh. Thanks very much. And of course, you know, again, so many of us are carrying a decently powerful camera with us in our phones all the time that's easier and easier to do. I used to take a big, bulky manual camera with me in the woods every weekend when I was walking, and I don't anymore. And I know that the photographs that I take aren't as good. They're not as high quality. They're not as crisp. If I were trying to blow it up into a poster, you know, my phone pictures are not going to do it. But for what I use them for social media or for showing my family or posting them online or sometimes, you know, framing a small one, they're great. And it means that I actually do have my camera with me at all times. And I'm able to focus on other things by putting it away sometimes and not worried about ruining expensive equipment. Allison, I'm wondering, though, you know, so many of us do take so many pictures, whether it's the person who's getting in the way of the wedding photographer at a wedding so that we can get our shot for our phone, or, you know, we're then using a filter to make an average sunset look beautiful. I mean, are we sort of diluting or watering down or just bastardizing good photography because so many of us are doing so many things that we're all thinking we're great photographers all the time and posting them everywhere?
What an interesting question. I come from the school of I've never met a photograph I didn't like. The worst photo I've ever seen is the one you don't take that you regret. So from that perspective, I say have fun with it. If you're enjoying all those filters that I never use in Photoshop, go for it. If you're having fun in Lightroom and that makes you more excited to go out and take pictures, then do that. For me, I'm more of a purist. I'm not Robert Frank, where I won't crop at all, or, you know, I'm not that rigid, but I don't do a lot of manipulation because of my background in photojournalism. There are all sorts of ethical reasons why you wouldn't change the aesthetics. But that said, if it makes you happy and it improves the quality of your photograph, by all means, I really just encourage people to carry that camera, keep that phone out, keep looking around, be conscious of what's going on around you. You know, don't zone out or only be looking at your phone. Really try to see the world around you. Try to make sense of it visually. Look at those books. There are so many good books out there that you can just spend a half an hour reading right before bed, like The Great Picture Hunt by my friend David LaBelle, or even David Hume Kennerly, this great Pulitzer Prize winner, also made a book on how to take better pictures with your iPhone. So there are so many resources available to you and online. Like Joshua was saying, there are so many chat forums. You could join a group of photographers or people in your area. Instead of a book club, think of it as a photo club. You know, you share your images, you talk about what makes a good photograph. It makes you inspired to, it inspires you or makes you more excited about taking photos wherever you go. I would really encourage all of those things.
Well, it's great advice. And Henry from Tunbridge tweeted in to say, I find that when I go for a walk, I see more if I'm thinking about taking a picture. Be sure to learn from the images you've taken. This is just a taste, a little idea of how to get some better pictures. I know lots more advice and lots more thoughts out there from so many of you. Allison Redlich is a former photojournalist with the Burlington Free Press, and she now teaches photography at Champlain College and also works as a professional photographer. Allison, thanks.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And Joshua Farr is executive director and curator of the Vermont Center for Photography, a nonprofit gallery based in Brattleboro. Joshua, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jane. It was a lot of fun.